What does that sound, you ask?
Welcome to the Rec Show Podcast, a show dedicated to beatmakers around the world. Kick back, relax with the host, Golden Mind.
God is great.
All right, check, check, simple? 1, 2, peace and love, everybody. Golden Mind here. Welcome back to another episode of the Rec Show Podcast. This is episode number 95. Yo, we five away from a hundo, man. So I want to say thank you to each and every one of y'all for tapping in, man, sharing this on your socials, really enjoying the stories that these artists are telling y'all, the jewels that they drop in and their music, all that type of stuff. So I want to say thank you. Last week, we had Elixir, man, that ill fairy on the show. So I need y'all to go ahead, tap in to episode number 94. And then the week before that, we had Sam Drumlow, Floridian beat maker, brand new, but he making them slaps. Week before that, we had Jay Ideas. That's Indiana's finest. And the week before that, we had Jay Phil, man, from howtomakeverysickbeats.com. Yo, I mean, what can I say? And this week is no different. We got another heavy hitter in the building, man. One of, I've been listening to his music for the last year, and I'm slapping myself because I'm late to the party. But hey, I'd rather be late than not at all. So, yeah, man, he's a event coordinator for like three different beat event type of things. And we'll get into the history about that a little bit. But he's also, I want to say another. Did you get another degree? I thought I saw you get another degree.
I did.
Yeah. So he got another college degree, a college graduate. We also, you know, family man. He's a music producer. What else don't he do? I'm pretty sure by the time we get done his interview, he might be an actor in his private life, by the way. So I don't know. Coming to America just came to my head. Oh, you know, I was an actor in my former life. You might be an actor in your former life, yo. But yo, I'm honored to have the one and only Superhero, aka Ero3, aka Erozilla. Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on, man.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I appreciate all the accolades and the beautiful introduction. It's my pleasure being on the Rec Show. You know, I've been peeking you out for a long time. 95, geez. Like, that's a lot of conversations. That's a lot of sounds you went through. So hats off to you for that, brother. And blessed to be here.
Yeah, it's my honor, man. Thank you for tapping in with us, man. And for the beat heads that don't know who you are, they should slap themselves after this show. But for them that don't know, for my mutants that don't know, can you give a little bit of who you are, how long you've been making music, how you even came up with your music moniker, and any affiliations that you might be a part of as well?
All right. Well, my name is Ero3. I spell it E plus sign R-O equals 3. Which is just an acronym for my real government name, Eddie Ross III, aka, or now known as Erozilla, which is a funny little pseudonym I came up with my name a couple of years ago, because in my mind, I was like, no matter who you think is ill, Ero is Zilla. Erozilla, Erozilla, Erozilla. All right. I've been making music a long time. I'd say since the early 2000s, really in the 90s when I really started. But I started sharing my music in the 2000s, particularly, I'd say, when the MySpace era was popping off, you know, 2007, 2008, 2009, those years was when it really started. I exclusively was a sampler when I first started. I'm not exclusively a sampler now. I do have learned to play and different things since then. But sampling to me has always been more of a connection between older and younger generations. You know what I mean? I feel like it's my job and my peer group's job to sort of make those bridges, because through society and through different barriers, you know, there is a big generation gap between the baby boomers and the Xers and minors. Mm-hmm. Xers and Ys, excuse me. So. Yeah. As far as me, I'm based out of Los Angeles, born and raised on the West Coast, Pasadena, California, little city where I reside now for the last 15 years or so. And I've been making music out of Leimert Park for at least 15, 20 years now. Affiliates with Leimert Park Art Walk, Chaos Network, Sankofa City, Project Glow, also The Good Life. Also various ventures that spun off through those venues, such as the Beat Cyber Collective, which was from 2007 to 2010, those years. Beat Battery, which was like 2018 to 2021-22. And now I've got an opportunity to curate my own show, which I know you want to talk about and I want to talk about as well. I entitled it Soul Clap Los Angeles, Soul Clap LA. We did the first one back in March. And the next one will be in June 21st, first day of the summer solstice, to be more specific. And the themes, it's a theme show, so I always have specific artists that I'm theming the shows after. The first one was Bobby Womack. His birthday happened to be during that month that I did it. And so the artists that I invite to the show, it's more of a challenge than actually just playing regular sets. I know that sounds really strange, but basically I'm giving them the samples to play with and we're only playing that. And then in the end, we put it together as a compilation, which I just released a Soul Clap number one compilation on the Bandcamp, soulclapla.bandcamp.com, by the way. I'm doing all that. I'm also a part of Fresh Produce LA. I'm also a part of Duck World. I am an affiliate, or I would say a family member of A Love Supreme as well. I'm playing Beats and Burgers next week. So basically anything in Los Angeles dealing with beats, I've been a part of, or I am a part of, in a sense. And we're actually curating a major show next year for all of the different collectors in Los Angeles. We kind of have like a Google Doc that we're kind of communicating on. So we're trying to put together our own Coachella, if you will, in the Los Angeles area next year. But you'll hear more information about that in your future guests, I'm sure.
Oh, man. Yo, I have to go to that. I have to go to that. You know, oh my gosh. Wow. Wow. Yo. Love Supreme, Duck World, Soul Clap. Yeah, I'm definitely going to ask you questions about Soul Clap, man, just because the project that you have on Bandcamp, it's like maybe 42 tracks, I think.
Yeah, it's 39 tracks, like 37 with a couple of different skits in it. All of the featured artists did like 2 or 3 songs a piece. And they all flipped the same records, but the way everyone flipping, you wouldn't know that they were all the same record that they were flipping. So it was a unique experience. Number one, it's unique in the sense that there's not going to be too many records like this that are going to be put out other than the ones that I'm doing for Soul Clap. You come to a Soul Clap show, I guarantee you it's nothing like you've ever experienced. I started 9 o'clock sharp, you know, all the way through 1 o'clock. It is nonstop entertainment. We have skits, we have giveaways, we have the surprise factors. And of course, you know, everyone is getting down. It is what it says. It's Soul Clap.
Man. Okay. Listen, I'm getting ahead of myself, but yo, for the listeners, listen, man, if you are in California or what's the next state? What's that? Arizona? Listen, if you anywhere near those areas, man, make it to Los Angeles, man. I don't know, or California in general. California, man, is on a different level when it comes to community. I know I said this before, but I know New York, World MC, the Donut Lounge is doing their thing. Wow. FABC is spread all over,
right,
you know, the United States, and then also in Toronto. But yeah. I don't know what it is about California. Like, y'all, well, you know, y'all community minded, man.
California, Los Angeles area specifically, is sort of the mecca of the whole scene. And that's not saying it's only there. Obviously, you just named a whole lot of places where folks, you know, have these communities. But the beat community is different from the other music genres or the other communities, in the sense that it's more of a humbleness that we all have towards each other. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. in rap and hip hop, it started off more with aggressiveness, and sure, there was a survival factor when you're dealing with other folks. It's almost like, you know, we were told like, you know, if you meet another rapper, like, you guys can't coexist in the same space type of stuff. Where in the beat community, it's more like we want to be with each other. I look at you more as collaboration versus
competition.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's spread out through the world. There's no real, you know, like, real ill feelings or hatred towards anybody that I know that's affiliated in the beat scene per se. And if there is, it's just, you know, it's also, you know, an age thing as well. You know, I'm up there in age in terms of the music scene. I'm a young man in life, but in terms of the music scene, and I've seen it where it's sort of come all the way around. You know, I know that's a popular cliche when they say things come around, but it really, really has. And like I was saying on the Beat Table interview a few weeks ago, shout out to the Beat Table, LAY, my folks, that we're experiencing now is we're all the children and nieces and nephews of, you know, DiBiase and, you know, Sam I Am, Flying Lotus, you know, those guys in terms of our sound. And we now have all the technology that wasn't available, you know, years ago, literally just a couple of years ago, actually, to pretty much create whatever it is, any kind of way that we want. And so that's the reason why the scene is sort of exploding, because you don't have to be a traditionally trained musician anymore to make beats. You don't have to even have a hip hop background per se to be good at making beats or to be a good, you know, producer. Then of course, you know, the beat scene, I split up to, you have your guys who make beats and make records and have projects. Then you have the live performers. You know, sometimes they're the same person, but most of the time they're not. You know what I mean? So I feel fortunate in the sense that I experienced both the original scene, again, back in the MySpace era when it was basically starting off. Not saying people started making these things, but that's when people started sharing them as far as being online and everything like that. Versus now, the scene again has rebirthed or regenerated, and I kind of can go by both. And that's why a lot of the people in the younger scene sort of gravitate around me and follow what I do, is because they know I'm still have my hand from back in the day from which you know that they came. Like, I was making beats on SP404 back in 2008 2009, and it was very few people doing it. A lot of people in the scene now, you know, 2008 2009, they were third, fourth, fifth grade, that type of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm blessed in the sense that I'm able to see what we were doing back then manifest to where it is now. Yeah,
you're a veteran, man. So, yo, I know you did the interview with LAY and the motherfucking B table. That's how you say it. It's the motherfucking B table. Shout out to LAY, man, and the B table, man.
Everybody's gonna have to run through him somehow, somewhere, in the B scene in LA. Like, that's how he's sort of establishing himself. Total respect the way he's doing it, but he's humble. He's putting work. He's going to all the shows. He's meeting. He's doing all those small things that, you know, typical promoters and stuff would hate doing and all that stuff. But he's also has an advantage, him being a beat maker and being from the old school beat scene as well. So, you know what I'm saying? So shout out to the motherfucking beat tape.
Yeah, man. Yeah, he, you know, I'm listening to the, you know, doing research for the show, and I'm like, man, this guy is taking all of my questions. He took every single one of my questions, so I had to come up with a different set of questions for the most part, because he did such a good job, man. Y'all, you know what I mean, just the stories that y'all were telling in that interview. And for everybody that don't know, man, I'm gonna link that show in the description of this show so y'all can check that out as well, man. Like, so you can get to know Erozilla a lot better, man. And I know you said you started out making beats on the Sony PlayStation. Yeah. So I always ask, like, you know, how you began your journey, but you already said that. So, like, what the instruments? I know you said,
well, in a nutshell, when it comes to as far as me learning to play, or even getting the confidence to think I can even play or make beats. Both my parents are from New Orleans, Louisiana, and they were into bebop, jazz, and all the sounds that came out of there that was strictly more like even a New Orleans sound type of thing. So that was always in me from get go. When I was 7, 8, 9 years old, I learned to play the accordion. It was one of the few things that my dad gave me musically. Of course, I didn't understand it back then because it wasn't a cool thing for a black kid in the hood to play the accordion, you know, mm-hmm. when everybody's out doing, you know, good stuff. But anyway, I learned how to read sheet music, treble clef and bass clef from it. And later when I got older, in middle school, I actually played the trumpet and trombone and brass about a 4 or 5 year period. And so, and if you follow my sound, you know that I have a lot of trumpets and horns, mm-hmm. In my production. But when I started making beats was when I got to college later on, about 17, 18 years old, and my friend had a four track, Tascam four track, kind of busted, whatever, but he left it at my house, at my apartment. That's where he used to keep it at. And so one day I started fiddle-fowling with it, and it was just getting samples off of records that we had, and that's how I started making beats. I was like in the mid-90s. But as far as getting the Sony PlayStation, which is, of course, what you were initially asking me, that was back in like 99, 2000, where it was the Sony PlayStation MTV Music Generator disc. That's actually still out, and they actually have like a third or fourth version just came out or something like that. But what we used to do was, it had, you know, sample sounds in it, but it would allow you to sample from other CDs, like up to like 7 or 8 seconds or something like that. So I use it as a sampler and mix it with the sounds they had and would make beats on it. It didn't sound like beats that would come from a video game per se. It sounds like really good music. And it's a lot of producers that I came up with, as far as what I call our studying years, if you will. that were doing the same thing. And if I, you know, told you their name, we'd be like, get out of here, in a way. So, yeah. So I say that to say that doesn't matter what you use per se, if the music is in you. You know, a good old friend of mine, rest in peace, Ross G. Oh, Ross. Yeah. He used to say, Ross. He used to say, one of his sayings to me was, it ain't the gear, it's the ear. Right? Mm. So I say that because I'm not big on gear. And I think that that's one of the things that people who make music now are kind of getting like lost in, if you will. It's cool to have all this and all that, but it's not changing. It's not changing, giving you or taking away anything from your sound. Music reflects whatever inside of you. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter the tool you use to get it out. It's going to sound the way it sounds inside of you once it gets out. Because I say that, they say, what do you use? I say, well, at some point I've used everything. You know what I'm saying? I just have an MPC. I've used all the software, start off with Reason, Fruity Loops. I used to use Sonar, Cakewalk, all that. SP303, 404, all that. I don't use any of that stuff now. But at some point, I've used it all. And so what's the common thread to all of it? Well, my mind. That's my gear. So if you ask me, you know, what do you use to create music? I said, music is created in my mind.
Mm. Listen.
Bars.
Straight bars, yo. It's not the gear, it's the ear, man. Like, yo, Raj, I remember Raj G saying that. DiBiase always says that. Knife Wonder says that too, man. It's not the gear, it's the man behind the what do you say? It's the man behind the machine. Yeah. So, you know,
because you know, there's magic in creating music, and you don't necessarily want to give that up. You know, it's a certain reason why you don't see some of your favorite producers make music, and you never will see them. It's there's a magic in it that, you know, it shouldn't. And it's funny because we're so now, you know, we have all these cameras and technology. We're so into the lives of the artists as individual. But back in the day, it was the exact opposite. It was almost like you weren't supposed to know the artist personally and all in their process and stuff. That's what actually made it more special, more great.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
You know, like I back then, you know what I'm saying? When I listen to Marvin Gaye, I'm just amazed at his angelic voice, you know, how he does his vocal inflections, how he does all of his ad lib, you know, all the type of stuff. I don't want to see it. I don't want to, you know, all this stuff, whatever, because then it's almost like, oh, I got to dissect it now. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I've finally come to a point in my life where I can listen to music objectively now. For a long time, I could not do it because I'm a music maker. I'm too critical on everything I hear. You know what I'm saying? As soon as the song come on, I'm already judging it. That snare's off. You know, that kick shouldn't go there or whatever, you know. But now it's almost like I can listen, and I can listen to my own music that way too. That's tough for a music producer to do, to listen to your own music from like a third person's perspective or something like that. I can do that now. I couldn't do that for a very, very long time. But yeah.
Yo, you are talking like facts, man, because I never seen up until like maybe Fade to Black, I never seen even Timbaland make a beat, besides like documentaries or videos and stuff like that. Right. Even Madlib or
never
anything like that. You never seen him make beats. So when you were talking to LAWA about how it used to be like an incubator type of thing where Motown would go and you would live with people for like 6 months, you know what I mean, and make music that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that way anymore. But the good thing about technology is now we have things like Zoom and Ableton Live Connect or whatever that thing is called. And people from around the world can connect on a computer and literally make a track from start to finish.
Oh, yeah.
That is amazing. But I understand when you're talking about the mystique of, you know, making music, because there is a magic. Like, I appreciate that magic, or not even knowing all of the techniques, because you're not going to get all of the techniques, all the secret sauces from your favorite beat maker, you know what I mean? Unless they just giving it away like that and they don't care. But
so, you know, a lot of people think that they're getting clout and stuff by doing that. When actuality, you know, I guess people who don't make music, that's very intriguing to them. But people who do what you do, it's almost like, okay, now, now I can judge you. I like you even more now. Now it's like, oh, dude, that's what you're doing. It's like, oh, now I like you less now. Type of thing. Like, why? You know, don't give it a choice. You know, if I play a song for you in face to face, I might not tell you it's me. I'm just gonna play it just to get your reaction. That type of stuff. I don't want to have to explain what I'm doing. If I have to explain, or if I want to explain, then that's kind of like defeating the purpose of why I'm doing. I think for me, my intentions are or the reasons why I make music or even begin to make music was just because I felt that I had a certain amount of talent in it, and I have a ear that was different in terms of my taste. You know what I'm saying? I was very like 16, 17, and I'm listening to Ahmad Jamal. I'm listening to Pharrell Sanders. I'm listening to Lonnie Liston Smith. I'm listening to, you know, all of these different greats. You know what I'm saying? That's the type of music I listened to and started making music after listening to stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like the music I make is historical in a sense, like, you know, it's historical, like, you know, it's not like in that sense, but historical in the sense that I want my grandparents, if they were alive, you know, our great grandparents to hear and be like, yo, I know that. That's dope. I feel that. And at the same time, I want my children and my future grandchildren, great grandchildren to hear it and, you know, want to relate to it or say, who, you know, who is this James Brown guy I've been hearing you play or something like that? You see what I'm saying? So I feel like sampling to me is a way of connecting. It's a way of telling history. You know what I'm saying? Versus playing. Playing music is great or whatnot, but when you're playing notes, there's no time period or reference for it. Is you playing great music. But if I'm sampling something from the 1960s or 70s or something, when you hear it, you're going to kind of feel like you're back then, so to speak. You know, so I feel that the art of and sampling itself is an art. Like, don't let anybody tell you it's not. You know what I'm saying? The way we chop samples up, flip them, stretch them out, all that kind of stuff, that's genius. You know what I'm saying? An average mind can't think that way, in my personal opinion. And that's why I feel like everything that we do as, you know, as people of the diaspora, we are geniuses, but society tells us otherwise. You know what I'm saying? And we tend to, for example, I was watching, like a lot of folks, is we're watching NBA playoffs right now. You know what I'm saying? Lakers are playing Memphis. I had a tough loss yesterday. But think about the mindset of a LeBron James when he has the ball, right? All these split-second decisions he's doing when he has the ball, the defender reacts a certain way, you automatically react another certain way. All of those pinpoint thinking, that's genius mind to do stuff like that. We don't look at it that way, though. But that's what it is. And I feel like what we do is creating music, even if it's not the most desirable music or whatnot, the process of it is genius. You know what I'm saying? And so you have value.
Yo, he dropping bars right now. Ero Zilla is here, everybody.
Y'all don't deserve this. Y'all don't deserve this.
Yo,
don't deserve this.
Listen, yo, you dropping crazy game right now, yo. Like, I just thought about this too. Like, you remember when they came out with that thing, like shut up and dribble type of thing, telling all the athletes, hey, you don't get to be political, just play basketball, you know, all that type of stuff, like. And I was like, yo, like the amount of athleticism and then computing power in the brain for them to do what they do at that level is crazy, yo.
It's crazy.
We take it for granted just because we think, you know, they owe us, but no, we don't, like, they don't owe us anything. Like, that's just appreciate it, man. Like, people hate on LeBron James. I don't know why, but he's one of the greats, man.
Right.
He's got to be
people
one of the greats.
People who hate or disrespect LeBron James is like, you're obviously not a student of the game. You're obviously not a competitor. a sports competitor. If you're a competitor in sports, you definitely should appreciate what he's doing. In the end, he's going to be the only player to do all the stuff he's doing. Over 40,000 points. He's going to have over, you know, 10, 11,000 rebounds, 10, 11,000 assists, over 3,000 or 4,000. Like, nobody else is going to ever do that stuff.
Nope.
And I think what it is that this is worth the conversation. We're not going to have it now, but this is worth the conversation on why we feel the way we feel about LeBron James. LeBron James did exactly what the opposite of what the society set him up to do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Nobody came into a professional league as a kid with more pressure than this young man did. Mm-hmm. Right? And what did he do? Not only did he exceed the expectations on the court, but nobody expected him to do all the stuff off the court he did. Nobody did expect that stuff. Like, from what I was told, he's given away, since he's been in the NBA, like over $500 million or something like that to various stuff, whether mm-hmm. building schools, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So, and he's a, you know, a billionaire player while he's still playing. He might actually, he has a good chance of playing with both his sons in the league if he stays healthy for another 4 or 5 years, right? What Man. Else does he need to do for you to consider him to be the greatest? The only reason why you don't consider him to be the greatest is because of your love for other players, mm-hmm. right? If there was no Jordan, if there was no Kobe, you'd say by far he's the best, absolutely. But it's because we love the other players, whatever. It's like, I don't know. Different eras as well. LeBron is one of the few players who's dominated multiple eras. Yep. The early 2000s, the 2010s, the early 2020s, right? Like, you know, that's asking a lot for it. Who's going to pass up the scoring record, right? Somebody who comes in the league at 16, because that ain't happening, and he's averaging 20-something points a year for 20 years straight or whatever. That's, you might have a shot at it, but nobody is going to, when it's all said and done, nobody's going to touch this dude. You know what I'm saying? But it's the way that I believe we've built him up to fail. And since he didn't fail, we're like, you know, he's been better than what we gave him credit for as still, a player and as a person.
Yeah, people still can't give him his accolades even after all of that. So
again, okay. And again, it's because their love for Kobe or their love for Jordan or their love for whoever. I get that.
Yeah. Yo, shout out Sean Sinatra, man. Sean Sinatra is a Laker fan, man. He's a LeBron James head. He was on the show in, what was that, March? So, yeah, man, he watching the games, tweeting all the time about it. Yo, I think he might be a coach after he get done in the military. But, yo, I had to ask you this question real quick because it's like you said something again on the interview with LA Wall on the B table, man, where you were like, if you were gone today, like the music on your hard drive would have just sat there. So the reason you put out as much music as you do is for that fact. So it don't sit there for your great grandkids, for your grandkids, for your, you know, your babies right now, for your grandparents. And I know a lot of my mutants right now are like, man, maybe I'm not ready to put out music. Maybe I'm just not at that level right now. When did you know it was time for you to like let the world hear your beats?
Well, that's a good question. I put out my first official project in 2009, end of 2009. It was a few months after my first child was born, my son Elon was born. And the title of the project was called Sunshine in the Bag. And of course, I was more happy of, you know, becoming a father and stuff. So, you know, a lot of the songs I put were like child or baby type of samples, if you will. The reason why I felt like I was ready then was because I had all these beats and all this stuff I was putting out on MySpace over the last few years. And folks was liking it and stuff like that. And so, you know, I'm like, you know, why not? So that's when I started doing it. But what made me start doing it in abundance was I had a partner back in 2010, from 2010 to 2020. My partner, who you may have on your show or may have had on your show, Mr. Abstract Butterfingers, ABF, aka shout out Embella Indoli, my man. We had a group back in the day called the Neckbreakers back in 2010. Start off as just being a Bandcamp project that we actually formed a multi group. And it was like 10 different members in the group. We were on some West Coast Wu-Tang of beats type of idea back then. Mm-hmm. My man Skyscraper, who was your guest a few weeks ago, was also part of the group. Him and his wife together under the name Fish Scale, but they've retired. Shout out Skyscraper, that's my man. Mm-hmm. So me and Embella, from that time, we started an indie label called Zypherin Label, which is sort of the opposite of a label, just more like of a collective type of idea. We did that through those years. And during that time, we put out like a new project every 2 weeks for about a 2 or 3 year period. It was really hitting them hard earlier. We were proud of all of them. Just people that we were just finding on, you know, on Instagram and all the different social medias, just hitting us up saying, hey, we got the project, and put it out and stuff like that. So doing it at that pace kind of trained me to sort of continue to sort of do it at a fast pace. Now, a couple of years ago, I had a situation in which it made me sort of realign my life, if you will. Right? Both that know me know what I'm talking about. Since then, at that time, it had hit me that, you know, if anything were to happen to me, per se, you know, it's not how the typical artist would think or whatnot, but if anything were to, I had a lot of music that I was sitting on, a whole lot that would have never gotten out. It sort of hit me like, wow, like I got to get this stuff out, whatnot. And so ever since that happened, I'm starting to just, I'm not putting the projects out at right after I make the music, but I've sort of became Prince with it, if you will. Like I have a library of different projects and it's like, I just pulled them all out and I separated them by months as far as how I'm going to release them throughout the year, going to the next 2 or 3 years. And so, and each project is full projects. All my projects usually have about 20 to 24 tracks, are usually 5 or 6 minutes long each. That's another story why I make my tracks so long and why I have so many as well.
Oh yeah, I got a question about that. Yeah. I was gonna ask you that, but go ahead.
But like I was telling the LAY, you know, the music just reflects what's inside of me. I got a lot of music inside of me, and I just don't feel comfortable sitting on music anymore that I know should be out. Now, in terms of when it's released, now that's a different story, because then I really don't have any real expectations other than my immediate, you know, folks who follow me, you know, other than them getting it. Other than that, if it reaches new heights and stuff, great, really is. But again, you know, as far as my goals, as far as who it reaches, you know, that's for the universe to decide. It's out of my hands, per se, and I'm okay with that. So I don't really check like numbers and stuff like that after I release it. I really don't, to be honest. I would like to, of course, sustain enough income from you know, my projects to ensure that I can continue doing them, obviously. But it's not like I have a goal financially or anything like that with my releases. It just feels right for me to release it. And when I release the project, it kind of seems like it's appropriate for the state of the world when they sort of come out, in my own mind, I guess.
Because once again, you're a historian. So, So right now, like Elixir, the ill fairy, man, she said something last week that stuck with me. She said, when she creates, it's kind of like creating a world, a different world where the listener can go to, put it on and just go to that world and just be in there in that world when they listen to the music. Do you create your music that same way for listeners?
I do. I would recommend the listener to, you know, you got 2 or 3 hours, of course, to listen to the records from the beginning to the end. You know, they're all themed and each song kind of lends or leads into each song. So, of course, I would like for you to get lost in it. But also, I want it to be like a underscore or like, you know, a soundtrack to whatever it is you're doing. You know what I mean? My music is pretty calm, you know, tranquil, mellow. So if you like clean the house type of stuff, I tend to think that my music is more more mature sounding than most, than a lot of other artists in the scene per se. So it may not have that, you know, that energy or that energetic fire. I mean, I do have some tracks like that, of course, and I have different genres of music that I've made for that reason. But for the most part, I'm really on some chill, sit back, light one up, close your eyes, meditate, get into your own head type of music.
Yeah, well, like some of your albums, and I'm gonna get to asking you about a couple of them, but like when I'm listening to your music, like you write, like it is just a sit back, enjoy it, man. And it's, you know what I mean, like it's not a, you know, 55 second songs, you know what I mean, like you literally are layering each track with a, you know what I mean, with different sounds, and you know, like that's, and it's emotional. I don't know about anybody else, but for me, when I listen to your music, it's emotional, and then it's goosebumpy at the same time when you do. So, oh man, I'm getting ahead of myself, because I'm gonna ask you about a couple albums, man. That man, when I was listening to them, man, they, yo, I almost shed a thug tear, man. Yo, so let me
of course
go back.
I'm gonna use a soundbite for my next project, but you know, continue.
Hey, do it. Y'all feel free, man. So, okay. So I remember you saying, in a previous interview that you started, cause I always ask about the pillars of hip hop. And you started with b-boying.
Yeah. I was like a lot of, current artists. Now I came from a breaking background. And not to say that I considered myself a breaker or a b-boy. I am a b-boy. I can dance, but still got it. You know, the old man just not as as flexible like I used to be. But yeah, I used to. We used to go to school with cardboard boxes back in the day. You know what I mean? I was telling a story on the B table that we had in my street. I grew up in Linwood, California, right outside of Los Angeles, south of Compton, north of South Davis Studios, geographic reference in L.A. The street had, you know, regular concrete street sidewalk, but there was one particular square that was really, really smooth. I don't know why, but it was really smooth. So that's where we actually learned to, that's where we would have our break circle right there. So we would do our, you know, all of our roundhouses, all our windmills, backspins right there, practicing. So we'd go to school, bring the cardboard box, and we just bust it out, you know, during lunch or during whatever it was. So yeah, I did that growing up. I wouldn't say that, you know, I was professional at it or something like that. Just a kid that just loved dancing. So that was probably my introduction to the culture as a whole. I did rap as a young kid. It was more or less just freestyling to have fun. Like back in the day, you know, the radio station KDAY, which is 93.5 now, back in the day, it was 1580 AM. It was the only rap station or the only station back in the day that would play rap. And so they would always have, you know, the call-in hours back in the day, like you would call in and, you know, you would either beatbox, rap, whatever. And so we would call in, me and my buddies, and, you know, we would play whatever beats that were available at the time, whatever was out. And we would rap over it on the phone, on the radio. So we used to do that a lot type of stuff. I got into the idea of producing music, or the idea came. I told this story as well. And after I saw the video for Rocket, Herbie Hancock's Rocket, this was back in, I don't know, 83, 4, 5, back then. And, you know, Herbie Hancock, you know, does a lot of different genres, mostly known for jazz and all that stuff, whatever. But Rocket was very experimental at the time because it had all the hip hop elements. For a jazz pianist, you know what I'm saying? It had the scratching, it had the it's a sound in hip hop that it sounds like almost like a, I can't describe it, but it was all the 80s rap music had the sound, and it had that in there. He had the electronic synth going. Then he had the part with, and then the whole time I learned later that all the visuals, because it was crazy acid drop visuals, you know what I'm saying? Like people walking around, like, you know, from the waist up with nothing and heads talking and all types of stuff. He was firing all of those different visual things while actually making the music in the video, like just complete audio visual madness. And so, you know, watching stuff like that, it's like, wow, you know, I already thought that I could pop lock break or whatnot. I see that. I would say the real hip hop that really brought me in was definitely Run DMC, which was interesting because Run DMC's early hip hop was actually more in rock influence. You know what I'm saying? People, you know, who follow that, you know, they had heavy, you know, like guitars and rock guitars and stuff on their production back in the early days. So I came up through the pillar of breakdancing initially before I got into rap and just led to music production.
Man, I'm trying to remember their producer that produced for Run DMC. Gray Beard, man. He produces for like
Rick Rubin.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Rick Rubin. You know what I mean? Yeah, he told the story plenty of times throughout the years about him, you know, Beastie Boys and all that type of stuff. But it was, yo, Run DMC. A lot of people may know about it, but they really unsung heroes. Like,
oh, absolutely.
For real. Because of their impact. Because Run DMC, without Run DMC, you ain't getting no LL Cool J. You know what I mean? Without LL,
you have to. Young folks have to see. It's a lot of, you know, musical movies explaining the early parts of hip hop. But you have to see Crush Groove, which is interesting because I just introduced Crush Groove to my son, my daughter, maybe about 2 or 3 weeks ago. That was one of the movies that I knew every single word in the movie, like word for word, every single movie throughout the whole thing. It introduced everybody who is legendary and East Coast hip hop, actually, because it was a New York based movie per se. We had, you know, went on to have breaking West Coast kind of style, whatever. But Crush Groove was like crazy because we saw, you know, how strong Run DMC was, Curtis Blow was, and the beginnings of Def Jam, all that introduced the world to all these different artists, Sheila E., New Edition, Fat Boys. It was awesome. So yeah, that's your homework for this month.
Yo, listen, ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Erozilla, man, Lost Pasadena, California, not Los Angeles, right? Pasadena.
Well, born and raised in Los Angeles, yeah, but you know, I've been representing Pasadena since 2009, so my 14th year out here, Rose City. Not really known for a beat scene per se, but Pasadena is rich in terms of a Black history, specifically. Pasadena, Altadena, also has a history dealing with, technology in terms of jet propulsion, laboratories here in Pasadena. A lot of celebrities back in the days lived in Pasadena just to get away from, you know, Hollywood and LA and stuff like that. So back in the day, it used to be kind of suburban. Not really suburban now, but that's what it started off as.
Yo, can you name, and if you're able to, I know it might not just be one, just because you have a wealth, a treasure chest of like information and history in your head, but can you name like one beat that as your like greatest of all time, or it might be a couple?
Oh, one beat.
When you heard it, it was just, you know, it just blew your mind, you know, like you didn't even know what you were listening to type of thing. Like you were like, yo, what is this? Who making it? How did they make this?
I would say my favorite group of all time, and actually there's a lot of different production references to these producers, unconsciously actually, Organized Noise Productions. But my favorite beat of all time is probably Elevator's Outkast. The drum pattern, the snare, with that huge like closet sounding reverb. Mm. You know what I mean? Bass line. The next thing, the melody based off of it, it was just, yeah, just that particular beat. They've had mad crazy beats, whatever, but that one was a game changer. And I think that was probably the song that changed that catapulted them as well. I think that was the first or second single off the second album. They were already large at the first album, but they were mega stars after APF. So yeah, that's my answer. I'd say Elevators.
Man, eighth grade, I like got the cassette for Elevators. Me and my brothers and my cousins were like, "What the freak?" We from Jersey, so they from ATL. We like, "Yo, what is this?"
Yeah.
We had to, like, we kept listening to it over and over and over again, man. It was like, it just blew our minds, man. Like, how they did that. And I can't remember who created that beat. I gotta look that up. But yo, man, like, that's
I know that their producers for the first album was Organized Noise. Second album, they broke away and started producing for themselves. So that particular track could have been produced by Andre and Big Boy themselves. If it wasn't produced before, I know it was all made in a dungeon. You know what I'm saying? So it all came from the same camp, if you will. But yeah, that one song was just kind of crazy. A lot of their, you know, I used to like I like soulful production. You know what I mean? I would also say you can't front on Goody Mop's first song. What's the name of it? Cell Therapy. That doom, doo, 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 doo. Very, very simple drum. You hear like a river sound or something like that. Then the bass line comes in. Doom, doo, 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 doo. It's like, it's crazy. So Organized Noise Productions, now that I'm thinking about it, is probably one of my biggest influences in terms of music production. I don't know. They were out of time. Like, they're producing in the 90s and 2000s, but they sound like they're from the 70s.
And they were really aliens, you know? Like, just from their sound selection and stuff like that, man. And, man, they were on, like, a different... I don't know what they were on, man. But, you know,
very underrated. And the GOAT talk. Very, very underrated. Very rarely... You know, everyone, you know, goes to your typical Pete Rock, DJ Premier, RZA, Lord Professor, all those great, great fire producers. But those guys together, Organized Noise, is just, and they, you know, as you saw, they made multiple genres of music. You know, they've won awards for producing for TLC, Waterfalls. I'm like, how the hip hop production, you know? That type of stuff. And then, shout out to Organized Noise Production, ATL. I know a lot of cats out here in the West Coast are not that familiar with their sound, but if you think about it, their sound kind of defined almost all of Southern rap at a certain point. If it wasn't, you know, No Limit sound or Cash Money sound. And they were on some, you know, I've always been on some, you know, outer space, intergalactic, you know, thing. And they had like the whole sort of storyline to go with it. You know, Planet Stink only in the name of the studio. I'm like, dude, y'all are just next level. Outkast is my favorite group because I feel like they made an effort to look like the music. You know what I'm saying? Sounded crazy, whatever. Look at Andre. Like, he was an artist. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was... Of all most rappers in the history of rap, I believe Andre 3000 was the most in his character as a rapper. And I think that he was too good for his own good. That's probably why he can't create, and he's not, you know, very, like he's in his own words, you know, he's not very confident right now as an artist today. I'm like, he did it to a point where it's hard to top that or even come close to it.
Organized Noise, everybody. Yo, that's another jewel that we just dropped, man. I might link. I think there's a Organized Noise documentary too.
There is.
Yeah, I think I saw
the
that.
The Art of Noise or something like that. I've seen it a million times. And it is beautifully done. Beautifully done. You know, they have, you know, as we touched on earlier, they have that cohesiveness of recording together. Like I was saying, you know, back in the day when they all be in the house or whatever, they had that at the dungeon. You know, they had a spot in one of their, you know, mom's basement, like literally under the ground, like no roof, no floor on the dirt, whatever, just run electricity plug down there. They had that. And it's almost like you can hear the love and cohesiveness in the music that they make. You know, you just hear it on the heart of the
guy. Yo. No, so speaking of that, as being something that you would recommend people watch, I got a lot of mutants and beats when I say that, that are like on this journey of music and discovering how to, you know, create songs and tracks and how to produce and do all these different things. But you having a wealth of knowledge, is there or would you recommend somebody like watch something, read this or listen to this to kind of help them along in their journey?
Good question. Well, it's really, really tough because there's no real starting point in making music or creating music. First thing you have to have is the want to do it, and you have to have a certain I don't give a fuck of what people think type of attitude to really, really do it effective. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. You can't be too conscious about going about it, because then you're trying to worry about how people are going to react, which is more than you actually doing it. So I don't know. Like, there's no real easy way to get into it. I would say, you know, start with something. You have a lot of easy softwares right now that are very user-friendly. You know what I mean? The Koala app, you know, I know a lot of the guests talk about that, but it's don't get much easier than that. You know what I mean? Just an app you can have on your phone that can literally sample any sound that's on your phone, or can sample stuff that's not on your phone, and you can input in there. It's a DAW on your phone where it actually allows you to construct and make beats and stretch stuff out and edit stuff like that. I know a lot of different softwares are free right now online to get. You know, I know Serato Studio, Serato Sample, I believe is free, or it was for a while. There's a lot of DAWs you can get that are free. Audacity is a free DAW. I use that. It's you don't have to be very talented anymore, at least to get it. And I think that's probably what stopped a lot of people in the past is there was a separation at one point from those who can do it and those who can't. And that line is so blurry right now because of the advancement of technology that it allows you to sort of do it very effective. You know what I'm saying? Like, you might not have any music training, but you can probably conduct a very tight beat in a short period of time just because of how the technology works with you, per se. You know, and I'm 50-50 about that because, you know, I don't want to be put in the same category as dude over here who's just been making beats for 3 months, but everything he's been making has been fire because, you know, he's invested in all these different hardware and software versus me who had to sort of create my own sound over a 25-year period. Now, aesthetically, on the surface, we are the same. He makes beats, I make beats. He probably has a bigger following, yada, yada, yada. Right? But we're not the same. You know what I mean?
So you can say it, yeah. Y'all not the same, yeah.
We're not the same, whatever. But, you know what I'm saying? The way that people judge it, looking at stuff on, you know, numbers-wise and algorithm-wise, that's a funny term nowadays, algorithm. Because you can have all the content, you can have the skills of training, but you might not have the best algorithm. So someone will go on your page or something, it looks like you're not what you sound like, per se. And vice versa. Your music could be garbage. You might have all this equipment in the world, but you just don't have the music in you. But your algorithms let everyone know, like, you're hot. You're this or that or whatever. So it's like we got to sometimes that stuff fools them. You know, it doesn't explain the real story.
Speaking of that, that's going to segue into my next question. Stories, man. You got albums on available all over Bandcamp, all over the DSPs. But there's three albums I want to talk about. The Moving Tree, which just came out. I think that's what, February?
Yes.
And then Sincerely Eddie 2.0. Beat Bully, which that's an emotional album for me. So like, can you talk about first of all, The Moving Tree? What does that mean? And then how did you come up with the tracks to blend with that title?
Yes, good question. Yes, deep concept. The Moving Tree. Yeah, you can tell by the song title what type of vibe I was on. This is what the concept was. Everything that moves, or everything that is alive, moves, including trees. We tend to think that trees don't move, that stagnant trees are alive, and they do move. But generally, trees are what you say, stagnant. They stay in one area. It's not like a tree grows here, and next year it's over here. It's where it's at. Mm-hmm. But a moving tree is someone that might be planted one area physically, whatnot, but spiritually and aesthetically, you're in different places. And so I said that I am a moving tree because I am planted as a tree is. My foundation and roots is in solid ground or whatnot. But my spirit isn't. You know what I'm saying? I move around. I go different things. If you notice, a lot of the titles are not just named after plants or whatnot, but they're actually named after geographical regions that you kind of look into or like that. You know what I'm saying? Like the bonsai tree grows where?
In Japan. Right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that type of stuff. So that's like I'm moving around the world with my sound. In a nutshell, that's what the concept of a moving tree is. Sincerely Eddie is, this is Sincerely Eddie 2.0. I had an album I released named Sincerely Eddie back in 2011 on Bandcamp under Ebro 3. I've taken a lot of stuff before 2020 down off Bandcamp just because I feel like I'm a different artist now. But it is archives. Anybody wants to get at me, you know, let me know. Sincerely Eddie. This one is Sincerely Eddie 2.0. So this one was a series of flips, per se, and these were all like classic flips. You know what I mean? So as you see the album cover, which I know folks can't see it, but
with you with the rose, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually a take on Lionel Richie with the rose in the mouth. It was actually, I lost the bet, I would say, with a friend of mine, and you know, he was like, if you lose, you got to use that as an album cover. It was just a fun thing I was doing. I was like, whatever. Lost the bet, so I use it as an album cover. So it was kind of like shock value. Once you see the cover, you're like, oh, what is this fool up to? Like, you know, let me go ahead and press play or whatnot. But it's also telling you how old I am, per se, because all of these samples are taken from music that I grew up listening to. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like Sincerely Eddie means this is sincerely me. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the now stuff that we're accustomed to. This is what I came up accustomed to, per se. So it's just flips of classic stuff that I feel like, again, sampling, bridging the older generation with the young, I feel like this is music that our parents would enjoy listening to, per se. And kids would hear, they'd be like, well, you know, who is I'll Be Sure? You know, who is, you know, all these different artists that I'm flipping? So that was a flip album. And that's why it's on Bandcamp. I didn't put it on all the DSPs because I didn't want to, you know, deal with anything, whatever, using this, whatever, using that. Right. I've dealt with that before in a sense, and it didn't amount to anything like that. Because again, when you want to get down to sample, which is samples, well, tell me what isn't a sample. Like, even that sound that your instrument is making is a sample. You're not creating or generating an original sound. So there's just, you know, how aspects of it, or how you look at it, per se. So that's that one. It was heavy sample bass. Sincerely, Eddie. This is on ero3music.bandcamp.com. All of them are, actually. And the previous project was called Beat Bully. It was just released back in November of last year, actually on my birthday. I release projects on my birthday every year. I've been doing that for a long time. But Beat Bully was just kind of like me flexing as a producer. And this is because, again, almost 2 years ago, I had an event happen to me in which, you know, it could have been possible where I couldn't flex. So this was the first full project that I had completed after that happened. And I was just on some, let me show you like how I can flip samples, mix them with my own, you know, sounds that I create as well. But I'm also going to sample records that you might be familiar with the records, but you wouldn't think I would sample this part of it, that type of shit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like, you've heard this record before, but like, I didn't think anybody would sample this part of it. Like, you know, that's the part everyone overlooks to get to the sample, that type of thing. So I'm just kind of just flexing, you know, as a beat, but I feel like it was a subtle message to everybody in the scene. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, my personality is kind of the opposite of what this record is. You know what I'm saying? I'm very laid back, non-confrontational at all, whatever. But I feel like Beat Bully was like on some real musical, like, this nigga is really, really good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like that, right. You know. And ironically, it had no vocal samples in it throughout the whole album. First record I've had with no vocal samples at all. It was just, I wanted you to fall in love with just the music, the beats, like no gimmicks at all. That's just what it is. And that's why all the tracks are just titled Beat Bully with different numbers.
Yo, like, yeah, like when you said, yo, I'm just flexing, like, you flexed the fuck out of this album, yo. Because I was like, I'm listening to it while I'm at work, right? And I'm like, yo, like, I feel like I want to sit down and just release tears, pent up tears. Yeah. Like frustration, yeah. Like happy tears, like it was that type of emotion when I was listening to this album, man. So yeah, man, like, yeah. Thank you, because
yeah, it was a combination of all these. It was like I was celebrating at the same time, I was a little mad on certain tracks, I was very festive on some. You know what I mean? Some of them, couple of tracks, I just sampled stuff just to sample. Like, it had no business being on, you know, on a record per se, but I made it sound like it's supposed to be there per se. So yeah, it was just a fun album to do, just to show the world. Like, it wasn't themed as far as, you know, any aesthetic theme like I normally do. It was just like, you know, this is just me. The cover is a picture of my face, like this side picture of my face. You know, it's more or less like shut up and press play. I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk. Just press play.
Yeah, let the music talk for you. Yeah, yeah, man. Because yo, I sent out like every now and then I'll send a tweet out to be like, hey, who are some beat tapes or some instrumental albums I can listen to right now. And you sent me one, and it was that album. And I was like, all right, let me listen to it. Okay. That was it, man.
It was probably when I dropped it, or right after. Usually I'll send it around, or I'll post stuff for my records like first week or so after that. Then after that, I'm already on to the next project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Yeah, that, yo, amazing job on this album. So for everybody listening, man, Beat Bully, actually, check out all his albums, man. Support on Bandcamp, man. Support after you support on Bandcamp, go to DSP, stream the music as well. Get the cassettes, right? Because that's I'm in the process of doing that right now, is getting the cassettes. And what's the organization that you were? Because the organization is with Bonding Tapes.
Bonding Tapes. Bonding Tapes out of San Diego. Shout out my man Real Rosario. What up, Will? I'll talk to you in a minute. But yeah, Bonding Tapes. This is a guy that has so much love for music, man. He's done a lot of projects on the strength, out of his own pocket, a whole lot of them. He's put out so much stuff. He had some health issues he went through a couple of years ago, so regret that he's, you know, back feeling great. He has a blog called, I believe, George with the Noise or something of that nature that's you know, beautiful. He buys and supports cassette tapes like every week, and he's reviewing them all the time. So, yeah, the whole cassette tape culture is something else within music culture. Because, you know, people ask me, like, why do people, you know, not into the beat scene? Why do you put out cassette tapes? Why would you do that? Like, nobody has cassette tapes now. Well, that may be true. However, people like to collect stuff from artists just because it's their stuff. And so a lot of tapes that I know I have sold people or people have bought, I'm pretty sure they didn't put it in the cassette player and play it because, you know, I have the music available online. So they have the, you know, the files and that. But it's just more or less a physical product of the artist. And to me, it's like it's more special if you buy my tape versus downloading the record, to me. And L.A. Ross says, yeah, I bought some tapes. He says, you know, some I won't even play them. He says, because what if I play it, put it in set tape, and the tape eats it up or something like that? It's an old player or something like that. Then it's ruined. I'm like, that, yeah. So that's what the cassette tape in my mind is for. It's not necessarily for you to go cop a cassette player or, you know, dust off your old one in the garage, start playing. That'd be nice to you, man, but it's just, you know, you got a little ego in your life.
Got you, man. Yo, I'm a link bonding tapes, man. I'm gonna link that in the description of the show too, man, so people can go there. Yo, there's like some of the artists that I've seen that have cassettes on that label. Crazy, man. Yo, I need y'all to go check this out. But yo, man, getting back to it. You're like let me get this right and correct me if I'm wrong. So, college graduate for the second time?
Yeah, I have a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration back in 1999 that I put to use in a different way, not in a typical way of some college graduate for a long time. But I went back to school when the pandemic broke out, like a lot of different people did, and just used the resources that were given to me to survive in the pandemic to sort of finance my college. This is a certificate of achievement, so it's the equivalent of an associate degree per se. So, and you know, looking at it literally, I kind of went backwards from a bachelor's to an associate's. But this is in a field that I love and I've always wanted to be in. My certificate is in, it's the program's called TVR, television radio, but it's emphasis is in radio production. And I interned with a local radio station last school semester, actually a nationally syndicated station. And I was a board operator for a lot of the on-air shows. And it was a fabulous experience. That, you know, a few years ago before the pandemic, just never even thought it would be possible. And going back to school after almost 30 years of being out of school, you know, the learning curve was a lot different. You know, when I was of school age back in the day, I was not a great student. I didn't have focus. I was into other things outside of what I should have been in. So now, you know, grown now, you know, as an adult, It was mind-blowing, fascinating. I actually have all the tools to be a good student now than I've ever had. And so it was interesting. Now, I did feel a little cheated because initially it was everything was online, like everything, you know, on Earth was during the beginning of the pandemic. And so being in radio production and being in television production, you know, a lot of it is in-studio, hands-on. So a lot of a few classes that I was supposed to take, I wasn't able to take them. I had to take them in a different way because of that. But overall, though, it was great. I just finished. I'm actually got another week to go, finally, or not. But yeah, it was more like just being a good example to my children, you know, particularly my son. My son's in middle school now, and you know, that's when, particularly boys, you know, we start finding school not that interesting or whatnot, or other things start taking our focus and stuff like that. So I wanted to show them that, yeah, even the old man, after all this time, can go back and finish something that I started. You know what I mean? So I think it was very inspiring for my children to see it. We had the graduation, or the Black graduation, rather, last week. And yeah, it was special. You know, my mother came, my wife, my children. So I had generations of everyone, you know, that I love there to see this. You know what I mean? So that was my reasons for going back to school. And it's been, you know, one of the best decisions that I've ever had. And being in class with 19, 20, 21-year-olds, you know what I mean, at my age, and we're talking about the now world, is to hear their perspectives on it, and it was mind blowing. You know what I mean? So I feel like, and that's why my position in the beat scene here in LA is very unique, because I have a young person's perspective on the scene and music in general and the state of the world, while being the age I am, and you know, and the experienced person in the music that I am. Yeah, probably comes through in my sound.
Yo, man. Well, congratulations on receiving that on that award. But you're also a family man, event coordinator, a live performer. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you do a whole bunch of different things. You perform for some amazing beat outlets like Beat Cinema, Burgers and Beats, Organic Beat Sessions. But also, you know, you put you got your but also you got Soul Clap LA. So, and you're active as heck. But for everybody that may not know you and Soul Clap LA, can you just give a description of, and actually you did that earlier, what
I'll give you a little more clarity on what it's about. Because again, it's meant to be more of a an umbrella for the scene. That's when I was formulating it. Because I want to invite all the different collectives to be a part of it at some point. And I feel like I'm a part of all the different beat collectives in LA, California, for that matter. And, you know, in an indirect way. So it's really for the scene. Soul Clap is based on a theme which we're flipping exclusively soul sound. And the themes are all soul. So the artists are soul artists, strictly of my choosing. The songs are of my choosing, but I'm asking everyone to flip. So I'm challenging, you know, beat makers and DJs. I've had people that I've invited told me they don't want to do it because they would rather play their own beat. They're almost scared to showcase brand new beats made just for a show. Now that's an interesting point, because I have had some artists tell me that they didn't want to do it, or they want to, you know, sit back and see how it works out or whatnot, per se. And I was like, okay, I understand, because I feel like I've been doing it so long, I can play material, I can come up with material on the spot. You know, whatever you invite me to play, I'm going to do what you invite me for. But not everybody is that confident. And it's like everyone makes beats, and they only want to play the beats that they've been playing, you know, for every show that they've done for like the whole year. That's their set in their show. So in a sense, I am disrupting that if I'm asking you, if I'm inviting you to come play a soul clap. So I get that. You know what I'm saying? I tell them, the people who I talk to, who I'm inviting, like, this is not your regular set. Like, this is a challenge almost. I'm structuring it almost like a game show, where I'll have everybody who's playing, everybody's going to be plugged in at the same time. You know what I mean? I'll point to you, play, you know, that type of stuff. You know, it's going to be interactive with the crowd, because the crowd doesn't know the samples or the themes until they start playing. You know, who can guess it? I tell my guests or my, you know, my performers, we're going to have raffles for the audience. So bring something, bring a CD, bring a tape, bring your shirt, bring something, bring soap, bring something, you know? And, you know, we as artists, we can be in it as well. that type of thing. So it's something for everyone. Even when I'm having breaks in the shows, whatever, I have something else going on in between there. So it's a like I was saying on the beat table, it's a pre-produced type of show. So everyone has their assignments per se. That's everyone. Sound crew, the visuals guy, you know, everyone has their assignments on what it is that I'm hoping, you know, everyone brings to the table. And then once we play it, obviously it's going to be a very unique experience. If you have all these artists off flipping their own interpretations of a common artist or a common song, you know. And then afterwards, I'm going to put together a compilation of everybody's work to commemorate the show. So yeah, so if you do Soul Clap, bro, chances are you don't remember me, you know. Everybody who did Soul Clap 1, I guarantee you, anytime they hear Bobby Womack, they think of me.
Which, and the compilation is out right now on Bandcamp.
Compilation is out. SoulClapLA.bandcamp.com. It is the hottest, most unique type of compilation that you're probably going to hear in a long time. I can definitely say that. It's a little something for everybody on there.
Listen, just the talent on this tape alone is like mind blowing, man. I'm even gonna start from the top. I'm gonna start from the bottom and
go right ahead.
Yo, man, you got yourself, Black Guy 9, Sachil Pages, Jet Lag Trav. Shout out to Jet Lag Trav, Najee Head, the OG man. Kershawn, T. Dot Einsoff, man, my guy, Duck Girl, like, okay, why, yo, that right there is, let's go, man, let's support this, man, yeah. Like, yo, I'm gonna link that in the description of the show, man, so y'all can check this out, man, yeah, support man. This joint, because if this is the way I think about when I buy music from Bandcamp or buy cassettes or buy vinyls, I think about it as an investment in the artist or whoever is putting that out. It's an investment to make more or to do something bigger and grander or something like that. Like, so I mean, we should think about it like that. If you support Soul Clap, you support this compilation, right? On Bandcamp, that money's going to go to Soul Clap number two.
Ensuring, right? There's another Soul Clap. Absolutely.
Exactly. So
this compilation is your reward for coming to Soul Clap. It's your reward for, you know, for sharing Soul Clap or something like that. This is, you know, these records, these ain't me. You know what I mean? I'm very one small entity on all of these. You know, you want to support Elixir. You want to support OKY. You want to support Voltage Controller. You know what I'm saying? You want to support Najee Head. You want to support Satchel Paper. You know, that's Satch from the Knots, bro. I used to sell mixtapes, but now I'm in it. Yes, legendary Satch. I had Press Morris was there. DJ Solo, Third Child, the Koala King. You know what I'm saying? Alf the Alien. You know what I'm saying? Retro and Cartagena. In fact, their interview is going to be on the table as well. Along with the other artists, you know, I had an open ox right in the middle of the show. You know how a lot of beat shows have an open ox before everything starts, you know, whatever. I had it right in between the ciphers. So when you played your open ox, everybody was fucking there. You know what I'm saying? So I had OKY for that. I had Third Child for that. I had DJ Warlock 1 came in for the open ox. Klopsy of Duck World. Yeah, you know, it was just mad love. Everyone loved it. We have, you know, I always have these threads that I do, just a communication thread right before the show, whatever. And the threads be hilarious because everyone is showing their true asses on the thread. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, what they post, whatever, it's cool. But on the threads, everyone is like themselves. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man, I love the scene. I love everybody that's part of it. It's just growing, you know, bigger and bigger day by day. And, you know, I'm just here to connect and to share what I do and what others do as well.
Yo, Ero, man, we appreciate you. We appreciate you. I know I'm not nowhere near, you know, Los Angeles, but from what I see and then what I'm listening to right now, man, I know as a probably a lot of people copying this sentiment right now. We appreciate you, man. Thank you. Seriously, yo, because you're not just doing it for self, man. You actually doing it for others. You know what I mean? And that's the best thing we can do anyway. That's what we're here for, is to for others. You know what I mean? We're not here for self primarily, you know what I mean? So thank you, man.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you guys for the past support. Anything you want to do, like I said, I just graduated from school. Venmo, PayPal.
I saw that.
I'm just putting that idea out there and whatnot. But no, yeah. but all in all, I appreciate it. Continue doing what you're doing, Goldmine. The Rec Podcast, the Rec Show is definitely a part of the beat scene in a major way. You're covering everybody from what I see, and you will cover everyone from what I see. The interviews, you know, they let people, you know, sort of just let their hair down. You know, I was just listening to the one you did with Elixir just the other day, and it was amazing. Like just how open, how free she felt to do that. And a lot of these artists I was just naming earlier, I know them sort of, you know, through online and whatnot, but I know them all individually in my own little way and whatnot. And by the time, you know, everyone hears this, it will be Sunday, I will have done, there will be a Ladies Love Loop show, another one at the Beat Cinema. That's actually tonight. So Ladies Love Loops, shout out to Kershawn, Elixir, shout out to Duck Girl. Shout out to Ladies Love Loops, all the female producers, beat makers, and all that. Tomorrow there's also a couple of shows. One of them I'm a part of is called Not Evil, which is going to be going down at the Love Song Bar. So again, when you guys hear this, that means I've done it a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. Whatnot. I'm also doing a show with Elixir, with the homie Frankie Jacks Nomad as well. So that's going on. In the next couple of weeks, we're gonna have I'm doing a show with AC Alone and Alpha Alien entitled AC Alone Presents at the Stowaway in LA. That's gonna be on May 13th. Make sure you look out for that as well. That's right, legendary AC Alone, a Freestyle Fellowship, is having a series of shows, and I'm one of his featured producers. Shout out my man, 80 Pays. You know what I mean? I'm doing a series, like a few different series of remixes right now. I'm on the remix tip, by the way. So, I'll share a couple of them every now and then, but you know, the algorithms be algorithming when it comes to remix. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. A lot of times I'll put it up and I'll post like, yo, enjoy this for the 3 minutes is up before they take it down type of shit. You know, I'll figure out a way that I can get that out there. If you're not fortunate enough to see me perform them live as well. And I take pride in my live performances. If you guys have ever seen me or will see me, whatever you see, I become the music part of it, you know, physically and everything. Not just up there, just playing music by my head, looking down at my machine, like, you know, a lot of folks do. That's because that's how they saw people doing beat sets over the years, or that's how they subconsciously started doing it. Like, no, I remember when we played beats back at the Beat Cypher, we would make sure you get into it. You in the crowd, I'm looking you in the eyes. You know, I'm dancing when the beat breaks down, that type of stuff. You know, and I think that one thing that's worked for me is that people see me enjoying myself when I'm playing my own music. And that kind of makes you like me a little bit because you see that I am enjoying myself playing music. So that's, you know, maybe that's some tips for you for your live performers and your future performers, is enjoy what it is you do. You know what I mean? Because, you know, there's aspects of what you do that only you can do, and people want to see that. They don't want to see you be like somebody else, or they don't want to see you. And that's a tough lesson to learn, you know, as an artist. I my curve was, I remember when I started playing beats and I would see other people doing sets, I'm like, ooh, I would like to do it like him or whatever. And I would do what he's doing, whatever, and no response. And one day I'm just like, I didn't know what I was doing. I'm just playing my music the way that I normally play it, like I'm creating it. And I look up and everybody's standing clapping. And I'm like, oh, snap. Like, y'all want to see me just be me. Flaws and all. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And what we think, and here's the last thing when it comes to our individual taste. What we think is hot is not necessarily hot in the ears of the rest of the world. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of times what I found is my throwaway shit and shit that I really, really don't care about too much is usually what people gravitate towards the most for some reason. And the stuff that I put the most work in and very articulate this and it's very detailed oriented, folks are here be like, eh, you know, it's the yin and yang of doing what I do.
I'm still trying to understand that.
Be serious about it. Yeah. Ain't no jokes. What was that?
Yo, I'm still trying to understand that concept. It's like, why do they gravitate towards the stuff that you didn't really put that much effort into, but the stuff that you put your blood, sweat, and tears in, they like, it's meh.
I can't explain that. I mean, I think that, you know, in general, the human ear is very simple. And, you know, at times we can overly complicate the music that we're creating sometimes. Not, you know, probably don't know it sometimes, but sometimes that could happen. And sometimes simplicity works. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Man. So, okay, listen. I'm a lot of stuff happening right now for you. I know you got like 5-10 performances lined up between now and the end of May, maybe even June. And secondly, I want to say thank you for those kind words, man. I'm just doing what I love, man. I love talking to you, artist, fellow artists, man. I just love, you know what I mean? I like knowing stories. Like, I like stories, you know? I mean, everybody's, I think we got away from stories for a little bit and everybody was just giving opinions and stuff like that. But stories matter, man. Stories for the artist matter. So, but I did want to ask you this.
What?
Like, what's the best thing about linking with these different beat events and performing in front of crowds, no matter the size for you?
Just sharing my gifts. You know, I like sharing my gifts. I like to see the effect it has on people who hear it. You know what I'm saying? I like to move people. Per se, and you know, we need it. If music is healing, you know what I'm saying? We need it. And I think that since we reverted socially, you know what I mean? And I'm sorry about that.
No, you're all right. Yeah.
So yeah, you know, it's important that we have it because it's healing, and we've been stuck in the house. We forgot how to be social with each other, per se. And music has a way of just, you know, lowering the guards. You know what I'm saying? Like, we might not understand each other because of barriers, music, race, religion, whatever the case may be. But we both identify with a dope ass 808. We both identify with, you know, a crunch clap type of thing. We both identify with the wah-wahs and all the different you know, filters we put on you. So it's a common ground. You know what I mean? Despite of where you're from, what you look like, what you do, sound is sound. And, you know, that's my thing. Like, I craft sound. I bend sound. That's been my title for a long time. I bend sound. I don't break it, I bend it.
Yo, and last three and a half questions before we let you go, man. So given some thought and with your history, man, can you name like your top five childhood, I want to say childhood, adulthood, beat maker, music producers, and no genre is off limits either.
Okay. You know, you asked him music careers and then it was top five, the biggest type of thing, whatever.
Let's see how much time you got.
It could be more than five, because I know you got so many people you want to name.
Well, I named a whole bunch earlier in various forms. Mm-hmm. You know, the traditional boom bap producers. I would say Large Professor, definitely. Q-Tip, of course, you know, late great J Dilla. In terms of, and when everyone says J Dilla, but I'll tell you specifically what J Dilla did. J Dilla was the heart of the Soul Quarians. And the Soul Quarians movement was the heart of the Neo Soul movement, you know, back in the late 90s and stuff like that. And the Soul Quarians were all based on J Dilla's sound. Like, he was the common thread for all of that. So what he did was he was able to take a traditional hip hop drum pattern and mix it with a swing pattern in the same type of song, if you will. And he took his bass lines and he created them to where they sounded like sub basses, if you will. Like, he was one of the first to do that, whatnot. But his gigs, I mean, his records were ridiculous. And I think that's what really, really separates him from everybody. It was the records that he was digging was incredible. They said that he had a formula, you know, especially when he got older, that he can make a beat from scratch like within 10 minutes, full beats, like with choruses, with, you know, with hooks and fully edited from scratch in 10 minutes. And they said it's the best beat you ever heard in your life. And I'm like, damn, you know. What, you know, your average producer, what you got in 10 minutes? No, you ain't even got your sample yet. You don't even know what record you're using. You know what I mean? You know, that type of stuff. So, great. So, yeah, those are my guys. Out here in L.A., I would say some of my influences over the years have been my man Teebs. Shout out to Teebs. A very, very... I call it like a flowery type of sound, where it's just aesthetically beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Shafiq Hussein is one of my heroes as well. Hold on, number five. I would say also, you know, shout out to Mr. DiBiase. You know what I'm saying? Which we actually went to the same high school on your part. I've been knowing it for a long time. I, you know, it's diabolic, but you know, shouldn't mention that name anymore. But yeah, DB came in. He kind of like ushered in a new sound. He's definitely the father and the originator of the 404 sound. So anybody nowadays, if you're using the SP-404 in any capacity, y'all give it up to DB, because he's the reason why y'all are using it. This nigga should have stock and rolling by now, but I don't know all that. That's my man. You know, I remember the time when we would be out outside of Project Load, he would just have his boombox. In fact, we used to go to Juju. Shout out to the Soul Children. And Juju is actually reopening. Juju was a very popular spot in LA for a long time, in which it was just like the ultimate in positive vibes, dance, soul, rare grooves, the whole nine. And they had a green room where, you know, the artists would go out and just chill out or whatever. And he would always bring his boom box back there and playing beats off the cassette tape, stuff he made up on PlayStation and all that stuff at Juju. So that's going back to like mid-2000s and stuff like that. But yeah, so definitely he's one of my peers, but also one of my big heroes, if you will. Let me see. One of the guys that I used to really, really like, who's not really active anymore, I don't know why, is Sam I Am. He had a very monstrous sound for a little guy. Kind of hard to explain. You know, so those are the guys, you know, kind of like inspired me. Ross G, like I was saying earlier, Ross had that sonic bass, and he had, you know, the full array. You know, he had the mystiqueness, he had the knowledge, We had, you know, the history of the records, the resistance, the deep individual, you know, gone way, 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 way too soon.
Yeah, rest in peace, Ross G, man. Actually, yeah, they just had a 404 day for him, too. I can't remember where it was, man. Was that?
Was that Pooh-Bah's Records?
Pooh-Bah's Records, yeah.
Right on the corner from where I live at. I live in Pasadena.
Wow. Were you able to go to it?
I didn't go that day. I was actually out of town when it happened.
Okay.
But I went, I've been to other 404 events last year. I did actually 404 post, which I, we did a commercial together back in 2008 last year for the B-Side Collective. And so I posted that virtually the 32nd clip shot by my man Stretch One of then television. Shout out Shucks. I've been killing it out in Japan. I've been there for a while now, but one of the premier video guys back in the day. He actually has old footage of B-Side Collective from 2008-9 that I'll eventually pound them and eventually share them when he's there with everyone. So yeah, those are a few of my beat heroes that we can get us to do. Who are actually going to do.
If you're able to, because I remember you talking to LLY about something, man, and it struck me. I was like, yo, I gotta ask him about this. You were talking about how you were curating like the Beat Cypher Collective, Beat Battery shows put together for beat makers, you know, just and folks who love beats and instrumentals. But can you talk specifically about the mindset that's needed when it comes to like manifesting your ideas?
Yeah, well, you know, you do have to have the mindset for you. I mean, you just have to sort of think past right now, if you will. I mean, if you're serious about curating a show, you know, you have to have your basic foundations on what it is. You have to have a place to have it. You have to have, you know, the sounds to make it happen. You have to have, you know, the right aesthetics, you know, in place, and you have to have the right people to do it. And, you know, you have to have the right resources to make it all work. You know what I'm saying? You have to sort of think about them like they're individual parts of the show. You know, I just think that right now we're at a point now creatively where anything goes. You know what I'm saying? I can just have a place and say, this is going to be my show right here. I'm going to advertise like it's our established show. And before you know it, folks will come in and be like, this is your show. You know what I mean? What it's proven to me is that, you know, my mind and my ideas have value with other people. You know, we charge $5 pre-sale tickets before the show and $10 at the door. And, you know, generally a lot of beat shows and functions in LA are generally free. Per se. But the reason why I did it was because I wanted to revenue share with my artists, not just, you know, feel like we're coming to do beats and go home and still grow type of stuff, if there's, you know, revenue to be made. And somebody told me, said, hey, $10, man, I would have paid $100 to come to this show. Like, it's all, you know, that's, I see the value in it. And that's the way I feel like we should see our own value. Now, the way that we've come up looking at our art in terms of businesses, you know, we look at it where it's expendable. You know what I'm saying? It's like, as soon as we have a show, we're putting together a show, it's free charge. You know, that's the sort of mentality that we've always had in terms of how we're tricking off our own art, if you will. I'm like, no, we don't have to do that. Especially now, after the pandemic, when everyone has actually had a rejuvenation of creativity, if you will. It's like, this is my art. I'm going to present it this way and you're going to respect it this way. You know, I don't know why I feel more confident in doing that now than previous before. Because I thought I could have bended it, but I just think that it was the timing of it. You know what I mean? Like, everyone wants a beach show where you don't have to go out to Timbuktu to go to. You know, somebody, you know, people want to see just creativeness. You know what I mean? And I said, well, my idea may sound silly initially, but it's mad creative. And once I can properly explain it to other artists, performers, there's no reason why they would not want to be a part of it. That's what I have to look at. And plus, you know, trying to compensate you, and plus do other stuff with you, you know. So everybody who I've invited, you know, they're not just random artists. They have something that we all can grow on, you know. Everybody who performed at the first Soul Clap were, are part of collectives, you know, or run the collectives, so to speak. So obviously their collective and their following will gravitate towards Soul Clap as well, vice versa. You know what I mean? And it's emotional deposits. Like I was telling my man Alpha, Alpha Alien, that one of my favorite words or phrases is emotional deposits. I like to do stuff for people, knowing that you might not do the same thing for me if the table could chime. That's quite all right. I like to do stuff for people before they ask me, can I do it? You know what I'm saying? Because chances are in the future, I'm going to need you for something, whatever. And you're going to remember, oh, yeah, remember Soul Clap? You did this for me? Yeah. Could be 10, 15, 20 years from now. You never know. But those type of stuff resonate.
Man, emotional deposits, man.
Gotta do those.
Another jewel. Man, another jewel just dropped, yo. Man, okay. Yeah, I literally have like 30 questions, but I can't ask all of them. So I'm gonna just ask the last two. Man, cause this has just been, it's a dope conversation that I think a lot of people will appreciate. If not right now, it'd be in the future. They'll understand and be like, damn, this was, you know, Erozilla's mindset. This is what he was into. This is what he's doing. Like, and this is how he's thinking about the world and not destroying it. You actually building. You know what I mean? You got that builder mentality of, you know, build it, they will come type of thing, you know? So, but for like the last two questions, and who are you listening to right now as far as beats and instrumentals? Who is Ero 3, Erozilla listening to?
Oh, man. A lot of cats that I named earlier. All the Soul Clap participants, I'm fans of all of them. You know, I even have the next show laced out, and I'm fans of all those artists as well. I'm not going to name them, I don't want to give them out yet, because I haven't announced the Soul Clap lineup yet. But I'd say, you know, one cat that I love his music, but there's other things about that are kind of questionable. But, you know, one cat I love is Knowledge. I love Knowledge beats, especially when his earlier beats, when he was with Flip Mode, he was doing stuff with Susie Analog. And so I like Knowledge. I like, you know, some of my favorites are just, you know, some of my own peers. You know, Skyscraper is really, really dope. It's not a future album, he just drops, is really dope. T-Dot Einzoff is really, really dope. Naja Head, come on, he's a beast. Like every project my man Naj does is just killing it. You know, and then, you know, my new up and comers as well that haven't really put projects out, but I'm waiting on them to. Duck Girl, waiting on her to put something out. Duck Girl and Popsy. So yeah, you know, I like, also, I'm trying to bring back older producers who haven't been making beats a long time or haven't been sharing their beats. I'm sure, you know, they're probably still making music. But I wanted to, you know, that's another reason why I wanted to do Soul Clap, is because I'm trying to bring back old producers that I used to, like, listen to stuff back in the Beat Cypher time and stuff like that. It's like, you know, I'll call you up. What you been doing the last 10 years? Well, bring up that MPC. I got something for you. You know what I'm saying? Got a whole lot like that. Mine's blank after that.
I got you. How important is having such a supportive partner like your wife and helping you do what y'all did with, you know, the Beat Cypher Collective and And what's the other one that you did?
Beat battery,
right. So how important and instrumental is that support from you?
It was imperative. But in general, to have, you know, a spouse, I think the most important part is someone to check your pride and your ego when it gets out of line as an artist. You know what I'm saying? You need someone to give you a humble point or a focus point, per se, you know, when you think you're more than what you want, more than what you really are, per se. So I think the counter energy of, you know, having someone to build you up and support you, especially when you're not feeling hot, whatnot, but also to, you know, to deflate that bubble when it's too big, you know, like come back down to earth, you're not, you know, all that. So that's important to have versus, you know, when you don't have a specific person to do all that, and you got to go by, you know, your friends and family who might just be all yes people, you know, as far as you're concerned, but we're not, who might not be able to be that honest with you. And there's a level of vulnerability that you wish you can have, that you can share with somebody that, you know, a lot of people don't have, you know, even in relationships, you might not even have that. So that's, you know, kind of important. And that allows you to, you know, be freely, to be free with your creation.
All right, man, Erozilla, yo. Lastly, man, what should the internets look out from you besides your performances that you have coming up? I know you're going to have some albums coming out. How can people get in contact with you and you know, your socials and stuff like that? Right, any final thoughts?
Well, you know, I got a lot of stuff that is already, I just recently released over the last year, this year and next year, going to be, you know, big years for releases. I just released a single called New Lease Part 2. It's actually a couple of days ago. It's on all streaming platforms. Concept of New Lease is, you know, once you have a life-defining event, and after that, you kind of have a new lease on life. So I had that a couple of years ago. The best way I can describe it is, once you see the glitch in the game, you play the game different after that. So that's like my concept of movies is the second one. Anyway, I have a full-length album coming out in June 1st. It's called The Intergalactic Adventures of Super Ero.
That name is crazy, yo. I can't
pretty
wait
much how it sounds. I have a couple of underground joints, just great Bandcamp ones I'm doing, one for Duck World, one for another collective. I have another full project I'm dropping in November. That was entitled Mind, Body, and Soul. That's going to be on my birthday, so look out for that as well. But you can find me, just look up E plus Roll equals 3 or Erozilla, Erozilla. You know, you might be ill, but Erozilla. You can find it in my link tree. I have a bio site, biosite.com/Erozilla as well. And you can find me by looking up Soul Clap LA anything as well. Those are things on all Ero.
Got you, man. That's how you find them, yo. Listen, Erozilla, man. Super Ero. Yo, it was an honor to chop it up with you, my guy. I really appreciate your time. I know the family is in there, so I think your daughter's, what, 5, I think? Or is it your son?
She's five.
Tell her to talk to the people, yo.
Yeah, you know, that ain't good enough. Raising, you know, a son and daughter is like ice and water. Like, what works for one don't work for the other one, and vice versa. You know, that's just where I'm at right now in life. You know what I'm saying? So,
Yo, man. So it was an honor to chop it up with you, man. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, man. I really, really appreciate you guys, all your Newtons out there at the Rec Show. I appreciate it. Support Ero. This is one artist that truly deserves your support. You know, it doesn't have to be financial. It can just be a simple share post. It can be a simple like, your story, whatever it is. Follow me. You know, I'm on all the social medias at Erozilla. On Twitter, it's Ero_Zilla. That's the only different one there. And yeah, catch me. I'm active. I'm in these streets.
plus equals 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 equals
equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals
equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals
equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals
equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals
equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals equals